Before the break, we were talking about the distinct possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald may have been ordering his weapons, allegedly used to kill President Kennedy and Dallas policeman J.D. Tippit, while working as an investigator for Senator Thomas Dodd of Connecticut's subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. They were investigating mail purchases of firearms. Interestingly enough, Dodd's subcommittee was a subcommittee investigating juvenile delinquency. I mention this because as I'm speaking on the evening of June 6th of 1999, or on June 6th of 1999, both access to firearms and juvenile delinquency have come into sharp public focus as a result of a series of shootings at schools. I did a documentary, a miscellaneous archive show, about the first of those in 1989. The documentary and the incident both took place in that year. It's called Purdy's Last Stand, an analysis of the Stockton Schoolyard Massacre. That's available from Spitfire. And I've noted in June of 1999 that the shootings at Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado have effectively spurred gun control legislation. And as I noted in the miscellaneous archive show, The Seeds of Nuremberg, in fact, gun control is not the liberal issue that it has often been made out to be, but actually the genesis of the push for gun control in this country goes back to fascist elements. And indeed, the very first U.S., substantive U.S. gun control legislation, the 1968 Gun Control Act, appears to have been adapted in considerable measure from the 1938 Nazi Weapons Control Act that was passed just a couple of days after, or enacted, I should say, just a couple of days after Die Kristallnacht. And indeed, the central figure with regard to implementing the U.S. 1968 Gun Control Act, Senator Thomas Dodd of Connecticut, is an individual who is well acquainted with the particulars of the Third Reich. He'd served as one of the as part of the U.S. staff at Nuremberg. He also maintained very strong connections, as we shall see, with the fascist elements on both sides of the Atlantic. The context of this is, again, the possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald may have been working for Senator Thomas Dodd's subcommittee when he ordered his mail-order weapons, and of course that purchase, inconsistent with someone who was going to commit a political assassination, those purchases helped to finger him as the patsy in the assassination of President Kennedy. For our discussion of Thomas Dodd and Lee Harvey Oswald and the possibility that Oswald was working for the Dodd subcommittee, we've been relying on the landmark book Deep Politics and the Death of JFK, authored by the brilliant Berkeley researcher Peter Dale Scott, published in hardcover by the University of California Press, copyright 1993. This book is an essential purchase for anyone serious about studying the Kennedy assassination. Nonetheless, it is a very flawed book, so with that caveat, I will go ahead and recommend it, but do note that caveat. There are some serious flaws with the book. It is nonetheless an essential work for anyone serious about studying Kennedy's assassination. Thomas Dodd's name also crops up in connection with the Kennedy assassination in another context. In addition to the possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald may have been working for Senator Thomas Dodd's committee, it was Senator Thomas Dodd who helped to provide Julian Sauerwein's Senate Internal Security Subcommittee with the disinformation that Lee Harvey Oswald was a Soviet or KGB-trained assassin and someone who was linked to the same assassination program that allegedly took the life of Stefan Bandera. Stefan Bandera was a Ukrainian fascist, the head of the OUNB organization that collaborated with the Third Reich. The OUNB not only provided the Third Reich with personnel for various Waffen-SS divisions and collaborated enthusiastically with the Nazis, the OUNB of Stefan Bandera also became a key element of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. That was a reworking of Hitler's Committee of Subjugated Nations, a consortium of Central and Eastern European fascist groups allied with the Third Reich. It basically renamed itself after World War II and became a key element of what came to be known as the World Anti-Communist League. Stefan Bandera was killed on October 15, 1959. In fact, his assassination appears to have been orchestrated by the Galen spy outfit. However, that organization, by the way, there's discussion of the Bandera assassination in RFA 37 and also in RFA Program 15, both available from Spitfire. In fact, it appears probable that the assassination of Stefan Bandera was actually arranged by the Galen spy organization, which then helped to point the finger of guilt in the direction of the KGB. KGB. Specifically, a fellow named Bogdan Stashinsky showed up and claimed that he was a KGB assassin and that it was he who killed Stefan Bandera. Elements associated with what was to formally coalesce as the World Anti-Communist League linked the killing of Stefan Bandera with the assassination of President Kennedy. And in fact, the Senate Internal Subcommittee report by Julian Sauerwein tended to link those two events, namely the killing of Bandera and the killing of Kennedy, intimating that Oswald was part of the same KGB assassination team as Bogdan Stashinsky. The fact that Bogdan Stashinsky had a key, half of a key, to Bandera's apartment, the other half of which was still in the door several years later. It's one of a number of different aspects of the Kennedy, of the assassination of Bandera, which casts severe doubt on the KGB did it hypothesis. It should be noted, too, that the day that Bandera was assassinated was the same day that Lee Harvey Oswald defected to the Soviet Union. In fact, Oswald was almost certainly working for U.S. intelligence, and it was not, in fact, the doctrinaire communist that he made himself out to be. Whatever the reality, though, of the assassination of Stefan Bandera, his killing, allegedly by Bogdan Stashinsky, was linked by the American far right, including elements associated with the World Anti-Communist League, with Lee Harvey Oswald's alleged assassination of President Kennedy. And in turn, these attempts at linking the assassination of Kennedy to the communists became known as a Phase One cover-up. In Peter Dale Scott's discussion, many liberals and people of more enlightened political persuasion, in fact, covered up the Kennedy assassination because they were afraid that if, in fact, the public perceived that the Soviets and or Cubans were behind the assassination, that this could lead to a third world war. So the attempts at linking Kennedy's assassination to the communists were an essential element of the cover-up. It was that linking that led many liberals to help cover up the assassination as well, even though they knew that it was not the communists. They were afraid that if, in fact, that became the public perception, and there were elements working very hard to try to achieve that, that that could lead to a third world war. It should be noted that the report linking Stefan Bandera's killing to Kennedy's killing received furtherance in considerable measure from Senator Thomas Dodd. This is discussed in Deep Politics and the Death of JFK as follows. Speaking of attempts to link the Kennedy assassination to the communists, finally, the chief press contact of the Shikshini Knights, Guy Richards of the New York Journal-American, published the claim, soon taken up by Frank Capel, by the John Birch Society, and by Charles Willoughby's American Security Council, remember that last institution, that Oswald, like another alleged KGB assassin, Bogdan Stashinsky, had been trained at a KGB assassination school in Minsk. A toned-down version of the story was subsequently published by Julian Sauerwein's Senate Internal Security Subcommittee, with help supplied via Senator Thomas Dodd from within the CIA. So note that not only did Thomas Dodd help to get the Bogdan Stashinsky canard into print, courtesy of the Julian Sauerwein Senate Internal Security Subcommittee, but that he was assisted in doing so by the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, you heard reference in that last passage to former Major General Charles Willoughby, the German-born fascist, who was General Douglas MacArthur's chief intelligence officer from 1939 through the beginning of the Korean War. Charles Willoughby discussed at considerable length in RFA number 10, as well as in an interview with Dick Russell, the author of the landmark book, The Man Who Knew Too Much About the Kennedy Assassination. Charles Willoughby, in addition to being MacArthur's former intelligence chief, became a fixture of the American far right, was very close to the Galen Organization and the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations milieu, and helped to found a number of overlapping organizations, which comprised a linchpin of American fascism. One of those organizations was the American Security Council, not to be confused, of course, with the National Security Council. The American Security Council was a private group. It became one of the key elements of what later coalesced as the World Anti-Communist League. It was founded on the file base of Harry Young's American Vigilance Intelligence Federation. Harry Young was a prominent American fascist whose American Vigilance Intelligence Federation in the pre-World War II period, an overtly anti-Semitic organization, had been incorporated into the Hitler Goebbels Anti-Comintern in 1939 and 1940. And in fact, the American Security Council and Harry Young's organization are discussed in RFA Program 14 about the World Anti-Communist League. And the file base of Harry Young's explicitly fascist American Vigilance Intelligence Federation, also explicitly anti-Semitic, were the database upon which the American Security Council was founded. A key member of the American Security Council was the aforementioned Thomas Dodd. That's the same Senator Thomas Dodd who had been instrumental in getting the Bogdan-Stashinsky canard printed by the Sauerwein subcommittee, the same Senator Thomas Dodd who had been on the prosecutorial staff at Nuremberg, and the same Senator Thomas Dodd for whom Lee Harvey Oswald may have been working in his capacity of investigating mail-order firearms. Turning once again to Peter Dale Scott's Deep Politics and the Death of JFK, we read, in the early 1960s, the American Security Council was the leading public group campaigning to use U.S. military force to oust Castro from Cuba and to escalate the war in Vietnam. That last sentence again. In the early 1960s, the American Security Council was the leading public group campaigning to use U.S. military force to oust Castro from Cuba and to escalate the war in Vietnam. Senator Dodd was on the ASC payroll when he generated the Senate subcommittee report on Stashinsky's supposed murder training school. That canard, by the way, was used to help cover up the Kennedy assassination in a manner that I've already explained. And, of course, John Kennedy was killed for, among other reasons, and then he was attempting to normalize relations with Castro's Cuba, who had agreed to move away from the former Soviet Union, and he was scaling down the war in Vietnam. There's considerable evidence on both subjects. The Guns of November Part 3 and RFA Program Number 12 will detail that. Please note again that Senator Dodd was on the ASC payroll, and when he generated the Senate subcommittee report about the Stashinsky Stefan Bandera killing and its alleged link to Oswald and Kennedy's assassination, and note again that Oswald may have been working for Senator Thomas Dodd's subcommittee when he ordered his mail order firearms. There's yet another connection between our political assassinations and people involved either in their investigation and or cover-up and the Dodd subcommittee. This involves Manuel Pena, the former Los Angeles police officer who also allegedly worked for U.S. intelligence. Specifically, allegations appear substantive that he had worked for the Central Intelligence Agency, discussed, by the way, Pena and his alleged CIA connections discussed in RFA Program Number 9. And as it turned out, Manuel Pena had also been working along with the Dodd subcommittee in the investigation of interstate firearm sales, and it was Pena who traced the telescopic sight on Oswald's Mannlicher Carcano. Peter Dale Scott writes about this connection as follows. Manuel Pena, the Los Angeles police lieutenant who was one of the pivotal officers in the LAPD investigation of the RFK case, had a federal intelligence background, according to his own brother. He had worked with the CIA. He had also worked, along with the Dodd subcommittee, in the investigation of interstate firearm sales at the time of Oswald's or Hiddell's purchase of a revolver from a Los Angeles gun shop. After John F. Kennedy was killed, it was Pena who traced the telescopic sight on the Mannlicher Carcano to another California gun shop, and that cites the Warren Commission document, which documents that particular fact. So Manuel Pena, one of the key elements of Special Unit Senator, the LAPD body that was put together officially to investigate but actually to cover up the Kennedy assassination, Manuel Pena's path also intersects that of the Dodd subcommittee. So again, with regard to Senator Dodd, he was not only the prime mover behind the first substantive piece of American firearms control, the first Gun Control Act, namely the U.S. Gun Control Act of 1968, from which he apparently drew heavily on the Nazi Gun Control Act of 1938. That's discussed at considerable length in the Seeds of Nuremberg program. But Senator Dodd was also associated with the American Security Council, a fascist organization that was inextricably linked with the World Anti-Communist League, based on on the files of Harry Young's American Vigilance Intelligence Federation. It was Thomas Dodd who helped to float the canard about the Bogdan Stashinsky Stefan Bandera KGB assassination school in Minsk. The floating of that disinformation, which was widely bandied about, by the way, in the aftermath of the assassination by elements associated with what was to formally coalesce as WACL in 1967. Again, that helped to, in the opinion of most observers, that helped to lead to the cover-up of the Kennedy assassination, because a lot of people were afraid that if the public perception were manipulated in such a way as to see the communists as behind the assassination, it could lead to a Third World War. Thomas Dodd was, as we've seen, an individual with many connections, and he, in fact, had more connections than we've touched on so far. One of his most significant connections was to a public relations firm they called, run by a fellow named Julius Klein. And Julius Klein's PR firm, in turn, served as the main public relations front for not only German heavy industry, but behind German heavy industry, the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, and what I have termed the Underground Reich. In fact, the cozy relationship between Julius Klein and a number of different Julius Klein and his German corporate clients and a number of different U.S. legislators became the focal point of Senate hearings in the mid-1960s. One of the people who was very close to Julius Klein was Senator Thomas Dodd, so close, in fact, that when Julius Klein was getting heat from the Senate about his relationship to German industry, it was none other than Senator Thomas Dodd who traveled to Germany specifically on behalf of Julius Klein to try to curry favor with Klein's German clients. Discussion of the relationship between German heavy industry, the Underground Reich, the Bormann Organization, and Senator Thomas Dodd is contained in the landmark text about the remarkable and deadly Bormann Organization. That book is, of course, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, authored by Paul Manning, published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart Press, copyright 1981. And of the relationship between Julius Klein and German heavy industry and the Senate's interest in this, Paul Manning, by the way, Paul Manning covered World War II for CBS News along with Edward R. Murrow. He trained first as a waist gunner on a B-17 and then later to cover the air war in Japan, and nose gunner on a B-29. And he was the only U.S. journalist to broadcast both the German and the Japanese surrenders, which he did for the CBS network. Paul Manning, one of the greatest journalists in this country's history, and the author of the definitive text on the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, again, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, Lyle Stewart, 81. In that book, he writes of the relationship between Thomas Dodd and Julius Klein and German heavy industry as follows. A distinguished U.S. senator was investigated and rebuked for his impropriety of conduct by a Senate committee of his peers, the beginning of the end for Senator Thomas J. Dodd. He had had a close and peculiar relationship with Julius Klein, who had been retained by German interests to polish up their image in the United States. Julius Klein and Associates, a Chicago-based public relations firm, was handsomely paid, for Ruhr industrialists calculated that having a Jew fronting for them in the United States would be good business. During June and July of 1966, Klein occupied the attention of a Senate Committee on Ethics, which was looking into the foreign agent activities of Mr. Klein. He had been lobbyist, political public relations counsel, and foreign agent for the Society for German-American Cooperation, an umbrella for such firms as Mannesmann AG of Dusseldorf, Rheinmetall of Dusseldorf, Flieg AG of Dusseldorf, Daimler-Benz of Stuttgart, Der Spiegel magazine of West Germany, that, by the way, owned by Bertelsmann, the state of Hesse in Frankfurt, and Bayer Aspirin and Pharmaceuticals. When Chairman Fulbright opened hearings in the Senate on May 14, 1963, Julius Klein was hesitant in identifying his German principles. There then follows some of the text of the actual hearings in front of the U.S. Senate. And skipping down after that, we read, The full scope of Julius Klein's political lobbying on behalf of his foreign clients did not surface until two other Senate committees held hearings. One was a subcommittee of the Committee on the Judiciary of the U.S. Senate in the 85th Congress, and the other consisted of hearings before the Select Committee on Standards and Conduct of the U.S. Senate in 1966 relating to Senator Thomas J. Dodd and his relationship with Julius Klein. Skipping down. These hearings were being widely reported in German newspapers and on television and radio, and Julius Klein suffered a falling away of his German clients, discomforted by the unwelcome publicity. He turned to his friends in the Senate for help. His friends included Senator Dodd, the late Senators Hubert Humphrey and Everett Dirksen, Senator Jacob Javits, the late Senator Kenneth Keating, and Senator Mundt, that's M-U-N-D-T. Continuing, Klein virtually demanded of Senator Dodd that he make a special trip to Bonn and speak with Chancellor Adenauer and others to persuade them that he, Klein, was highly regarded by senators on both sides of the aisle and that his Germans should not fear to continue doing business with him. So Senator Dodd traveled to Germany on behalf of Julius Klein, who had contributed so much money to his campaigns and to his personal lifestyle. His meeting in Bonn with Chancellor Adenauer was arranged by Dr. Ludger Westrich, W-E-S-T-R-I-C-K, State Secretary in the Office of the Federal Chancellor, likewise a director of the Society for German-American Cooperation. On his return to Washington, Senator Dodd sent a fulsome letter of praise written by Klein to Ludger Westrich, who had been promoted to minister. One phrase therein, quote, "I know of your splendid record," unquote, was not without unintended irony. For Westrich had another type of record which had been concealed, but which was known to the OSS. He was a classified Wehrwirtschaftsführer, a leader associated with notorious Nazi enterprises, and he had also been a district economic advisor to Reichsleiter Martin Bormann. The Senate committee found Senator Dodd's relationship with Julius Klein indiscreet, one that went beyond the proper role of a United States senator. But because of an inability to identify and question Klein's German clients, they declined to pass a formal motion of censure on Dodd's relationship with him. So note again, not only did Senator Thomas Dodd receive a lot of political support and financial support for his political career from Julius Klein, but he specifically traveled to Germany to meet with Chancellor Adenauer on behalf of Julius Klein when the Senate began putting heat on Julius Klein. Now note again that one of the people that Thomas Dodd met with and when he went to Germany, and the person who arranged specifically for Dodd to meet with Chancellor Adenauer was Dr. Ludger Westrich, who was State Secretary in the Office of the Federal Chancellor and also a director of the Society for German-American Cooperation. Ludger Westrich is a name that we've touched on before in discussion in this program, specifically in two pairs of half-hour segments, one entitled Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow, done in the summer of 1998, and a couple of weeks later an overlapping program entitled Connecting the Dots. We took a look at Dr. Ludger Westrich as one of a number of German industrial and financial figures who were not only associated with the Himmlerkreis, Himmler's circle of friends, but who also were very much involved with the preparations along with the SS for the German economy to survive into the post-World War II period. Those arrangements obviously inextricably linked with the Bormann organization that I've spoken about so many times in the past. For more background on Ludger Westrich, we're going to turn to a text that we used before in the aforementioned two pairs of half-hour segments. That text is The Splendid Blonde Beast, subtitled Money, Law, and Genocide in the 20th Century, authored by Christopher Simpson, published in soft cover by the Common Courage Press, copyright 1995. And in The Splendid Blonde Beast, there's discussion of the Himmlerkreis, that's the Himmler circle of friends that we looked at in Uncle Sam and the Swastika, the industrialists and financiers who financed the SS's operations and who in turn got the pick of the SS slave labor pools for their industrial operations. And what we're going to look at now is the preparations by people from the Himmlerkreis, the German government, and the SS to make arrangements for the post-World War II perpetuation of their economic and social power, and political power as well, obviously. Turning to The Splendid Blonde Beast by Christopher Simpson. But as the war turned against the Third Reich, A number of business leaders in the Himmler Kreis began to cooperate in clandestine and semi-clandestine contingency planning for the post-war period. Two of the best-known of these groups, the Arbeitskreis für Außenwirtschaftliche Fragen, or the Working Group for Foreign Economic Questions, and I'm sure I blew that pronunciation, and the Kleine Arbeitskreis, the small working group, were nominally sponsored by the Reichsgruppe Industry Association of Major Industrial and Financial Companies. They brought together Blessing, Rasche, Kurt von Schroeder, Lindemann, and others from the Himmler Kreis, with other business people such as Hermann Abs of the Deutsche Bank, Ludwig Erhard, then an economist with the Reichsgruppe Industry and later Konrad Adenauer's most important economic advisor. I would add he later succeeded Adenauer as Chancellor of Germany. Note the next participant, Ludger Westrick, RKG Aluminum Industry, non-ferrous metals, and Philip Reimsma, tobacco, shipping, and banking, with Nazi business specialists such as Otto Ohlendorf, the former commander of the Einsatzgruppe D murder troops, and Hans Kurl, SS business specialist. A half dozen similar business forums emerged during the last years of the Third Reich. Most of these overlapped in membership, and all of them favored some variation of the corporatist strategy for empire articulated by Hjalmar Schacht, Abs, and others during the showdown over Aryanization in Vienna discussed earlier. So note that Ludger Westrick was a key element of this milieu involving several different groups which were preparing for the post-World War II survival of German industry. And note that Westrick was not only a district economic advisor to Martin Bormann, he was a key economic official with the Third Reich. He then went on to hold a significant position with the post-World War II government of Konrad Adenauer, and it was Ludger Westrick who arranged for Thomas Dodd to meet with Konrad Adenauer on behalf of Julius Klein. By way of understanding some of the many connections of Thomas Dodd, and it was the opinion of the late Paul Manning that the Bormann Organization played a prominent role in the assassination of President Kennedy. In discussion of the book Were We Controlled by Lincoln Lawrence, similar information about the manipulation of the Bunge Corporation, the Kennedy assassination, and the collapsing of the stock market was developed. There's discussion of the book Were We Controlled in a pair of half-hour segments about Manzer El-Kassar, done in the late summer of 1998, and that is available from Spitfire. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.